And now Geico presents 30 Seconds with Maxwell the Pig.
Maxwell, you're on.
Cool. And so you just want me to read the script? You don't want me to do the wee thing? Okay, today I'm going to talk about the new Geico mobile app and how you can manage your policy and get your ID card and customize it with your favorite Geico character. But I'm not yelling wee or anything because they don't want me to, right?
Correct.
Okay, just saying it's my thing.
Everything you love about Geico, now mobile. Download the new Geico app today.
Introducing a faster way to push to talk. AT&T Enhanced Push to Talk. AT&T delivers more of what your business needs. Instant communication, up to 1,000 contacts, plus a broad array of devices and platforms. Visit att.com/enhancedptt3 to get your business started with a free Samsung Rugby 3. You push to talk, we pushed it further. AT&T, rethink possible.
Limited time offer. Free phone on new activations only. Requires 2-year commitment to eligible voice and data plans, plus activation of AT&T Enhanced Push to Talk service.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20, because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody. What a beautiful day it is. I just came in from the pool, yeah, in my Speedo. And it's because we're back live. It's great.
We've
and
been back live.
I do want to say, well, I want to say something. Scott Druneau from The Source, Wolfgang Puck's The Source, was kind enough to sit in for me last week, but I think he got stars in his eyes. I think he, like, liked it.
I think he did a really good job.
I think you should be quiet. I think he thinks he's going to bump me. So I have challenged him to colanders at 20 feet.
Okay.
Out on Connecticut Avenue. We'll see what happens.
He's probably like, what?
He's
what are you
a
talking
wimp.
About?
All right, so we've got a jam-packed show today. Back with us again is James Beard Award-winning cookbook author Joan Nathan. I would say that you are certainly the most famous Jewish cookbook author in the world, if not the galaxy. She's in to talk about the annual Sips and Sups event that benefits Martha's Table and DC Central Kitchen. And we're going to be talking about that. She brought Michael Bartscherer with her. He's the acting executive director from Martha's Table.
Because are you pretending the rest of the time?
That's the only time I get to act.
I'm her acting husband.
Dimitri, and that's not a joke.
That is a joke. Dimitri Moshevitis and Jeff Mates from Kava are in. They're participating in the event. And I think Dimitri's nodding because I said his name right. No. Huh? How about me? Huh? It's amazing what you can do when you're sober, pal. All right.
Well, I think you should also mention they brought a fantastic array of some of their wares. And I cannot wait to dig into them. So we were really fortunate the other night. We were at Capitol Grill Steakhouse, and we got to taste some of the wines from a new winery called Mira Wines. And we had a terrific selection of them. It was really terrific. And the winemaker, Gustavo Gonzalez, is in studio. He's going to pour some for us. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, boy. My body's going to remember. No, lit up right away.
And if you walked by the old Cafe Atlantico space, you may be kind of curious what's opening up in there. Well, we have the answer. And the chef in studios, Chef Frederick Dupuy, is not opening one. He's opening two concepts coming up. One is Azor in the Cafe Atlantico space.
Your name should be Dudu, right?
That's not funny.
Well, Dudu is, that's two in French.
I know what
course.
It is.
If you were worldly, you'd know.
Okay. And then the other one is, we're calling it tabla, correct? Tabla.
It's table. You're an
spell
America,
table,
boy.
But it's pronounced tabla.
Right, okay.
Anyway, so he'll be filling us in on both of those in a little bit.
And listen, if you think coffee is just about getting caffeine into your veins to, you know, to jack up. Well, I do, because I'm old. Mm-hmm. But Joel Finkelstein's in from Qualia Coffee. They're the new DC coffee shop that focuses on brewed coffee versus espresso. And we're going to talk about quality roasting, quality beans, and putting some more coffee in my body. Now, If you've been to Bethesda's Food, Wine, and Company, you'll know that our buddy Michael Haar is the chef there now. They also have a terrific beer and wine and cocktail program. And Francisco Garcia, who's the GM, and David Burks, who's the beer sommelier and GM of Beer, Wine, and Company. They're accompanying beer and wine store. They're in to mix up cocktails and give us some info about the restaurant. And guys, why don't we start with you?
You need to move that mic in front of you, though, so you can actually use it.
Yeah, it's radio.
There you go.
Well, hello, radio. So tell us, what's the concept for Food, Wine, and Co.?
Well, Food, Wine, and Company is American Bistro. We're globally inspired. We have a little bit of something for all palates, whether...
Even mine?
Especially yours.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well,
I wouldn't be so sure about that. But go ahead.
Certainly. You know, whatever you're in the mood for, we're happy to cater to your palates and your needs and your wants. Our beverage program is very expansive. Got about 125
different beers. You said expansive, ladies and gentlemen, not expensive, right?
Okay.
Am I right?
Okay.
Got about 125 to 130 beers. I rotate my taps. I'm very into craft beers. We have about 330 different bottles of wine from all over the world.
Jeez.
And, well, our cocktail program is ever expanding as well. We're trying to embrace the craft spirits scene, and as you will see here as I showcase some cocktails for you.
So what does embracing the craft spirit scene really mean in terms of the ingredients and how you prepare the cocktails?
Well, they're handcrafted. I mean, just this bottle alone, that number right there is handwritten. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All this, can you tell, since the people on who are listening can't see the bottle?
Yeah, radio
can you tell, can you tell them what
Well, I'm holding Dancing Pines chai liqueur.
Okay.
Okay. They're out of Colorado, and they're really up and coming. I mean, the stuff is...
What is a chai liqueur?
This has been infused with chai and black tea, all organic, okay? And it's going to mix lovely with a cocktail that we like to call the White Tiger. It's a spin on a White Russian.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, but that's not your first drink. What's the drink you're making first?
The first drink we're making is called Bourbon for Breakfast.
I love that.
Okay.
Yeehaw!
Absolutely.
I want to have it for breakfast every morning.
Could you just, let's make it easy, just mix it with the Mira wines and send it over.
Right.
So what's in our Bourbon for Breakfast?
Okay, so it's our spin on one of my favorite cocktails, the Old Fashioned, except we take, in place of sugar, we have some top-notch Vermont maple syrup that we've spun with some black peppercorns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then instead of maraschino cherries, we have some pickled Bing cherries that have been pickled with mulling spices, anise, cloves, nutmeg, port wine. So
it's a really easy drink to make.
Absolutely.
It did not take a lot of time.
Well, you know, it's... does take some planning, but you can, once you have the ingredients together, whip it up together.
All right. Well, why don't you do that?
I would love to.
Excellent.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
And let's turn to Michael and Joan and talk about sips and sups. You guys, this is the fifth year.
Well, we've been talking about this now.
Face to the microphone, my dear.
Ever since this started. I mean, you launched this with the inauguration of President Obama 4 years ago.
Yay.
So let's talk about how it's evolved.
It has evolved. It started out where Alice Waters asked me to have 12 dinners, and she asked me which organizations we wanted the money to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggested DC Central Kitchen and Martha's Table as two organizations in need and that were beloved in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 12 dinners. 5 years ago, and then we had all like Tom Colicchio and
Rick
Daniel
Bayless
Belli,
was in town.
Rick
yeah,
Bayless. And then it's like the little engine that could. It's grown and grown. This time there will be over 30 dinners, and you can't have Scott Druno until he makes his Chinese banquet with Eric Bruner Yang at one house.
All right, I'll wait to kick his butt.
But there are almost 30 dinners with a pig roast in one backyard, Chinese dinner, two kosher dinners.
Oh, wow.
And there are at least 20 people at each dinner. Alice Waters is going to have 60 or maybe 70 at her dinner.
Wow.
And they're either $550 or $1,000. The mini bar is 12 people at $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Sunday night. But we didn't have the first year. And it's again, this has grown. We have sups. On Saturday night. It started out in somebody's home, and it's grown, and we expect to have between 500 and 600 people at the museum this year. And, of course, Cava is one of the – they've been with us, I think, every time since for 5 years. And we have all different restaurants and artisans that will be coming and mingling with people. So if you're a DC foodie and you want to meet people like Alice Waters or Jose Andres and learn about sustainability, this is the place to go, because all these people are going to be there from New York, from California, and they're eager to talk to other people.
Well, let me jump to Dimitri and Jeff. How'd you guys get involved? Did you hear about it and get in touch with these guys, or did they reach out to you? And
well, Jeff was actually the...
You have to talk into the mic.
This is radio.
Okay. We're here, but the mic is there.
Jeff was actually who got me involved with it. Mm-hmm. This is actually my first year doing it.
Okay.
Personally, but we've been involved for about 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff...
We've been involved with Martha's Table just because as a local food manufacturer, product manufacturer, we often have food that needs that can't be sold for various reasons, whether it's test product or whatever, and we need something to do with it. So we've been involved with Martha's Table, just providing extra food product and really participating in any event that Martha's Table wants us to participate in.
We like you.
The ladies are sitting around going, tzatziki by dinner. Yeah. So, but you're also you have famous restaurants in lots of locations around town. Does the extra food from the restaurants go out to Martha's Table and places like that?
When we can get it there,
yep.
Certainly.
Got it.
Well, cool. Let's talk a little bit about Martha's Table. Michael, why don't you tell people about the organization?
Sure. First, I did want to point out what's so extraordinary about the event is that it's two very well-known organizations in the city that have come to that could be competitors for the funding, and instead have come together and collaborated to make this event happen for our mutual mission of addressing the needs of poor families and individuals in the city. There's over 110,000 D.C. residents who are living below the poverty line. That's one in three children are living under the poverty line here in D.C. I mean, these are just our neighbors and our friends.
Okay, so let's spend less on defense and more on food. Seriously, we can feed them.
We can feed them.
We just don't.
This is an addressable problem, and there's a lot of ways to address it. We can address it in the immediate with the various food programs that D.C. Central Kitchen has and that Martha's Table has. And then we both have programs. D.C. Central Kitchen has a tremendous program. They graduated their 90th class of food providers.
Right.
And we address it with our the immediate problems with the vans that go out in the evening and serve meals. We have pantry programs. We go into schools. But we also have education programs, mm-hmm. where we try and break the cycle of poverty.
Martha'sTable.org, right?
It's for people that want to find it.
Yes. Well, let me, because we're, things move along here. I've got, SUPS is pretty much sold out. So while it sounds cool, there's not much.
But let's talk about SIPS a bit more, because right. It's also the more accessible
right.
event.
And it's not, it costs $95.
Right.
And that $95 will all go to helping DC Central Kitchen and Martha's Table. So if you want to get your feet wet, that's how to do it.
It's right. also a blast of an event. I mean,
right.
it really is. There's so many people there. There's music. There's energy. It's in a fabulous
space. So you're saying
space.
Get your feet wet while you wet your beak.
and there's going to be wines from Italy and wine tasting. There's going to be Loudoun County wines with wine tasting.
No disrespect to the wines here, of course.
I think I hear Mira involved.
and we're having like a church group that last year made, I don't know if you were at SIPS.
Yes.
Where they made string cheese and showed you how to do it. So that all these artisans will be showing how they do what they do, and you'll be able to have a taste. So that you'll learn something. And I hope the Kava people will show them how you make these dips. I mean, don't give away your secrets. But
are you doing a demo there? Is that what you're planning on doing?
We will be serving all of our line of 10 different packaged dips and spreads, which are also sold at local grocery stores, Whole Foods Market included.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dimitri will be serving a dish from the restaurant, which I think he can tell you a little bit
about. Yeah, I'm going to be doing like a charred baby octopus
mm-hmm.
with a cucumber ouzo pairing with a little fava and some fennel salad.
So, isn't octopus hard to do, though, for a big event?
Well, they move around a lot.
You know what I mean. Like, that could be... I mean, I love octopus, but is that hard to do?
We use a great product, and... it stays really, really tender the whole entire time. So
okay.
Really good stuff.
Excellent. All right. Well, we have to take a quick break.
I just want to say one thing. Okay. Make sure people understand that at Sips, we've got little food stations, and there are tons of really top-line restaurants that are participating.
And mixologists.
So you're not just sipping.
We're not just drinking in studio. You can also drink at
Sips. You're grazing.
Yeah, it's a great evening to have. It's so much fun.
It is. All right. Well, thank you so much. We're going to come back to you just so we can wrap it up after the break. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Fooding the Beast. We'll be back in just a second.
Union Market is becoming D.C.'s go-to place for fresh, delicious everything, especially American lamb. Increasingly, chefs and home cooks find American lamb to be the perfect balance of flavor and nutrition. American lamb is easy to cook and brings variety to your table. The American Lamb Board reminds you to look for American Lamb year-round at Harris Teeter, and don't miss Craig Rogers' signature Border Springs Farm Lamb at D.C.'s spectacular new Union Market.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast, and I got to talk fast. We're talking about Sips and Sups. It's coming up next weekend. It benefits Martha's Table and DC Central Kitchen. And Michael and Joan, tell people quickly how they can still get tickets, get involved.
Well, I'd recommend that folks definitely go to our Sips and Suppers, www.sipsandsuppers.org. And you can get tickets there. And we encourage you all to get involved both in DC Central Kitchen and Martha's Table. There's food prep opportunities. There's opportunities to tutor our children. There's opportunities to work in our stores. So please come and check us out.
There are opportunities to be a good person.
There are.
So go do it. All right.
And
so,
let me just quickly recap the how much it costs. It's $95 for sups.
For sips?
I mean, for sips. I think sips and sups, you know. and it's $550 for most dinners, but $1,000
for the mini bar. Okay.
And again, sipsandsuppers.org.
Okay.
All right.
Great,
and we want to thank Dimitri Mashavitis and Jeff Mates from Kava. If you're out there, and you've been living under a rock and you haven't been to Cava yet, get off your butt and go there. Go.
And
go
Sugo. Don't forget Sugo as well.
Absolutely.
Potomac Park.
Wait, did I just turn it
Jones
off?
Knee turned down my microphone.
Oh, no.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, so.
Back to Food, Wine, and Co.
Mm-hmm.
So, guys, we talked a little bit about your cocktail program, but you also have this separate store, the Beer, Wine, and Co. Tell us a little bit about the program over there. You can lift up the mic because you're tall.
You are tall, dude.
There you
How
go.
Tall are you?
6'8".
Damn. All right. Well, you better start talking, man.
All right. So Beer, Wine, and Company is a unique store in the heart of Bethesda that features anywhere from 550 to 600 different craft beers from all around the world, with a majority focus, I would say, on American craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
We have an extensive wine selection in all price ranges, we're going to showcase a beer here that I brought called the Schlafly Tasmanian IPA.
Okay.
This is a brewery from St. Louis. And
is it related to Phyllis Schlafly? No? Hope not?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
Probably not.
So the unique thing about this beer is called the Tasmanian IPA because it's brewed with Galaxy hops, which are grown in Australia. This is a particularly citrusy varietal of hop that imparts nectarine, tangerine flavors, pineapple.
Cool.
This is a beer that has real minimal malt base to it.
Is it found in a lot of places? I mean, is one of the reasons, is it hard to find beer?
It is pretty hard to find. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, all why right, don't so. You give us all a little pour, please?
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to ask you to move the mic over so that Gustavo, other direction.
Does she look like a Gustavo? All right, so we met Gustavo Gonzalez.
Just the other night
at a great wine dinner at the Cap Grill. And Mira Winery is a brand new winery out of Napa Valley. And you should see the suntan on this guy. It's unbelievable. But let's start with you, Gustavo, because you had a pretty interesting background with really one of the best known winemakers in the world.
Yes, I did. Well, during Mira Winery, I worked at the Robert Mondavi Winery, where I was the winemaker responsible for all the red wines in the Napa Valley for them for almost 17 years. So right out of school, I got a chemistry degree from Berkeley. Got an internship at Robert Mondavi, and then kind of walked up the ladder from the lab up to winemaker.
We had a neighbor that was married to Robert Mondavi's daughter.
Wow.
Jack Galloway. Does that name ring a bell?
I never met Jack Galloway, no.
Oh, man. That's an interesting little tie-in there. All right, so...
Well, let's talk a little bit about Mira Winery. It's a recently launched winery. Tell us how one goes about launching a winery.
Well, you know, as a winemaker, you always have your dream of having your own wine at some point. Mm-hmm. And luckily for us in California, it's not as complicated to do so as in other parts of the world. So in 2009, when times were a little bit tougher for both wineries and wine growers, one of my good vineyard friends, Larry Hyde, called me and said he had some Syrah available. And at that point, I got in touch with two other people that are really into wine as well. We became associates to launch a new brand. So in 2009, me, Tom Kowchick, and Jim Dyke came together all with different backgrounds to start this project. The easy part was buying the grapes and making the wine, waiting 3 years, and then the hard part was coming up with a name almost a year ago to the day now,
right?
And a logo and a label to get it out there. That was the hard part.
Well, let me ask you a question, because Mondavi is a you know, they've got a great reputation, but they're a volume producer, and you're making a boutique product here now. So how hard is it? Is it just a method of math? You know. Dividing things? I mean, it must be a different game for you.
Well, it is quite a different game. They both have their challenges. And when you're a small producer, your biggest challenge is you don't have a lot of options if something goes wrong. So you can pretty much ruin your vintage and not have a product if something happened in the barrels or there was some kind of earthquake, which we tend to get in California once in a while, and we lose all of our production. We're kind of done, at least for that vintage.
Yeah, we have them here, too.
Well, not as major.
Do things happen outside of California?
That's what people in Washington say, too, just so you know. So tell us about, as you were coming up with the kinds of wines you wanted to put together, how did you select the styles that you were going to go with?
Well, what I look for is authenticity in what I do, and I think a lot of people do that across the different food and wine things. And so my whole goal was, we started with Syrah, try to find the identity of what that Syrah is in the Carneros vineyard, where this comes from, and try to figure out what Syrah is in general. And as we started sourcing other fruit from other growers that come from specific areas, which is what we do, we try to find what makes Cabernet from that area Cabernet, what makes Chardonnay from Oak Knoll District Chardonnay, and try to interpret that in a different winemaking for each of the varieties.
So in your Syrah, what were you looking to, like what were you looking for as a winemaker? Because you can try 10 different Syrahs, and they will all taste very different. What was it that you were looking for in your final product?
What I was looking for is what I was tasting in the vineyard in Syrah, and what I have been accustomed to know what the interpretation of Syrah is in the Rhone Valley. And that, to me, it's got a lot of meat, a lot of peppermint character, a lot of body, and quite a bit of tannin, too, to support it.
And so do you feel that you accomplished that with your
I do feel that I accomplished that. You know, we did.
Is he going to say no?
Well, no, I'm just curious.
I do feel that. And I think when you taste it, you'll see that most people that taste a Syrah say that really tastes like Syrah.
Yeah, and you've opened a bottle. Is that the Syrah?
And I've opened a bottle.
Let's give it a shot.
Let's give it a shot.
Don't listen to the man behind the curtain. I'll tell you if it's got peppermint.
All right.
So while you're pouring that, why don't you tell us about some of the other wines that you're producing at Mira?
So what we decided to do is to... branch out, because I love Burgundy. It's kind of what I try to pattern myself after. And though they only work with Pinot and Chardonnay, some producers, you know, we're working with the five main varieties throughout the Napa Valley. So we're doing Chardonnay, we're doing Sauvignon Blanc, Mm-hmm. We're doing a Cabernet, a Pinot, and the Syrah. And occasionally we're going to do some fun blends here and there. And so the goal is to try to source fruit from different areas, like I was saying before, that really reflect what this winemaking philosophy is.
All right. Well, let's talk about marketing, because you're a brand new winery. And we learned at the wine dinner that basically you're on a kind of a goodwill pop open the bottle tour to get people familiar with Mira and what you have to offer. Is it available in the Washington area yet, or still online, or how do we get it?
The easiest way to get it right now is to visit our website, miranapa.com, and check us out. You'll see what a good job we did with our label there and how beautiful it is. And hopefully, you know, if you like it enough to try it, maybe eventually join one of our wine clubs. But here eventually, we're doing this tour at places where we know, where we have contacts, kind of a grassroots type approach, and going to restaurants.
You did notice that there's a restaurant, two restaurants in here, and a wine store in here.
Right. And you also notice that there's a lock on the door. They'll never get out unless they commit. So.
That's right. So, you know, through relationships that we have, we've been able to get some placements in a couple of restaurants here, like the Capitol Grill and Charlie Palmer's, and hopefully the Blue Duck here pretty soon, and mm-hmm. Bobby Van. So, and
all good restaurants, all great restaurants.
Yeah. Well, we were talking at that dinner, and people had a lot. You took a lot of questions, and people had some very thoughtful ones about wines out of California. And one of the gentlemen talked about people putting in like powders or to create certain complexities in wine. I had never heard of that before. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Well, you know, there's different types of wines that are out there, and you know, not everybody's looking for the same thing that we are, which is maybe one vintage is going to taste great, one vintage is not going to taste as good. But you know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to reflect what's created that year and that vintage. Other approaches could be that you want to have a consistency year in, year out, and maybe you don't want to spend $1,000 for a French oak barrel, so you're going to buy something that tastes like oak and just kind of put it in like you do when you make chocolate milk. You know, instead of cocoa powder, you're adding oak powder, mixing it up, and all
so
of a sudden
gross.
You have the taste of
oak. It just
sounds
disgusting. It just does.
Well, the comment at the dinner was that that's what beavers eat when they're on a diet. So,
but
my comment, actually.
Right. But is that a widely done practice?
You know, I think it's done more widespread on lower-end wines than they are on finer-end wines.
Okay. Great. All right. Well, let's take a pour of your wine. And how are we for time?
While we're doing
that,
we're going to move to Frederick, and we can come back and talk to these guys in a little bit.
Okay, great.
Frederick, slide in here.
We need you to take a seat. Michael, I need you to please stand up.
Chef Frederick DePue is an old buddy of ours. Actually, you were one of our first guests on this show.
No, he wasn't.
What? Yes, he was.
A couple of years ago.
It was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Well, I consider that one of our first guests.
Okay, have at it.
This is our first fight, public fight on the air. So, you're insane, because you're opening two restaurants at once.
I heard, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Azur, which is in the old
Café Atlántico space,
space, and then Table. Or Table, depending on how cultured one is.
Yes. Yeah, we definitely, had no intention to open kind of simultaneously. To start off, we had some delays with DC Water. It's all solved, so we're opening next weekend. We're going to open Table first. Table for most of them.
What are we calling it? We need to come up with the name.
Table. Okay.
Well, when they say it, it'll be, honey, let's go to Table. It won't be Table.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's a restaurant that I really wanted to create for a very long time. It's a small field. It's an old garage that we kind of changed up, two-story garage that very close to the kitchen. It's an open kitchen. It's like a chef's line, wine and beer only. So it's going to be a wonderful atmosphere.
So tell us a little bit about the concept, what people can look to as far as the cuisine there.
The concept that I had in mind is I want a relaxed restaurant where if you don't ask for a check, you don't get it. So you come in, you have a wonderful dinner, you have a wine, you just sit back.
Wait, are you saying, whoa. Right. If I don't ask for a check,
if you run out, then we catch you and give you a check.
I'll say Frederick said.
The concept is where you come in, just relax and have a great dinner with friends. And the chefs are just in front of us. We're just sitting in front of you. So it's a really close neighborhood restaurant where the main courses are changing daily. So we really going to have a close relationship with our suppliers, where we're going to work with them and say, okay, I have 20 pounds of this, you know, tenderloin, whatever it is. This is great product. We put it on the menu. It's sold out. We change it. And the first course and desserts, we're going to keep on the menu seasonally. And the main course, we're just going to have fun with it. And whatever we feel like. I have a great chef also in the kitchen. It's Patrick Robinson, who came from Citronelle. Okay. He was a head in the Citronelle, so he's going to head my kitchen there while I'm also opening the other restaurant.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about...
I'm sitting here drooling.
...the other restaurant and how that concept differs, and then how you'll balance... I mean, you're basically having twins, like how you'll balance doing
that. It was a dream of mine to have twins.
All at once. Okay, this is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, and guess what? This coming Sunday, we're going to be live at the fabulous Union Market from 11 a.m. to noon. That's Sunday the 27th. Join us for the show, and then afterwards, stick around for an incredible array of seminars and classes, cooking demos, tastings, wine sessions, and lots more. That's Foodie and the Beast live from Union Market right here on 1500 a.m. next Sunday, and stick around for a great time afterward.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Soon, this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to our good friend, Chef Frederick DePue.
But I'm going to interrupt for 1 second.
What?
I just tasted the Cava's Crazy Feta. I've always seen it in Whole Foods. I've never bought it because I'm not a feta lover. This is delicious. It's real. Everybody needs to try it. Come over. Everybody needs to have some.
Did
it
you guys?
Really
whoa. Did somebody slip her a 20?
No, it's delicious. It's really, really yummy.
All right. Well, I'm getting back to Frederick.
Sorry,
because
Frederick.
Because that concept I really like. I mean, the not only will.
Oh, he likes not getting a bill.
Yeah.
That's what he likes.
I heard that.
And you know, Frederick, I love you the way only a man can love another man. You know that.
I know that.
So you're opening that restaurant in about a week, and then we've got Azur in the.
Old Cafe Atlantico space,
which I think a lot of people in the city are trying to get that space.
It's a landmark.
How many tables are there?
We have about 150 seats in total with the bar area included. It's a challenging restaurant because it's four levels.
Yeah.
It's two levels officially, but it's four. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of staff. It's a lot of bodies inside to make it work. But it's such a landmark, and I thought when the opportunity came aboard, when I heard from Jose one night that they were selling the building, I thought, well, let's make an offer, and the following week we signed the contract. So
that's amazing.
That's great.
And I'm making a full seafood restaurant. I worked for a year in Brussels once in the Sea Grill. It was a two-star Michelin restaurant, and I miss a restaurant where you can have, you know, the salt crusted fish, a good bouillabaisse, some classic dishes, but now simultaneously make it very modern. And
well, let me ask you a quick. Oh.
Well, actually, you know, the sort of concept of a seafood restaurant has sort of gone by the wayside. I mean, if people ask me, you know, where's a good seafood restaurant in D.C., there's no restaurant that is just doing seafood right now. So that's a very interesting way of sort of positioning
I think there
yourself.
Was a lack, especially downtown. I think one comes to mind is always Black Salt of Chef Black that I think has a great reputation. But at downtown D.C., there was a lack, and especially in the Penn Quarter where you pretty much have everything today.
Right.
But that was one item that is missing. And I think it will be appealing. We have a very inviting bar area downstairs. We made the bar much bigger than it was before. And the seating, we imported pretty much every single piece of furniture from Europe.
Really? Well, I was going to ask, we were having a conversation with, who was it, David Hagedorn from the Post Food section about, he was making swordfish at one point. I mean, there are all these articles about the oceans essentially getting fished out in the next 20 years. Is that valid? And if so,
Put a bullet in his restaurant concept.
No, it's not putting a bullet because he's getting seafood.
It comes down to using sustainable fish. And I think as a restaurateur, as a chef, you should educate people what you can have and what you should eat.
I'm with you.
I think the lack in general in the restaurant, when you go to supermarkets, it's always the same five fishes you find back in the fish line.
Right.
And I think as chefs and restaurateurs, we should bring type of fish and seafood to the front and say, hey, this is what you should be eating. Mm-hmm. And if you want, you will go and ask your fish producer in the market, whatever. It's like, do you have pompano? It's a Virginia fish who's amazing. You just grill it with some extra olive oil, lime on it, and you have a wonderful fish and dish.
Oh, you mean pompano?
Pompano, yes. My accent, I had made a little special sound. But I think there you make a difference. We're going to have an oyster bar. We have about 16 oysters on the menu constantly from the East and West Coast. And then we would love to have also a caviar tasting. I think it's kind of fun.
I would love that too.
Especially with no bill.
Exactly. That's a different restaurant.
I'm sorry, I just can't get off that.
But when you say a caviar tasting, are you talking about like domestic?
Well, we're working with Petrosian.
Oh, so you're working with the
and,
good stuff.
And at the old mini bar, Jose Andres mini bar, we will have a full oyster caviar bar.
Fun.
And it will be about 18 grams in a little jar. It's going to be very nice.
Wait, 18 grams or 18 grand?
Grams.
Oh, okay.
What about the targa?
Are you going to have that?
Joe, now you have to say it into the microphone because
targa
nobody
is dried mullet roe.
Yes,
I don't like it.
It's called the caviar of the Mediterranean.
I love it.
Ugh.
Well, we have something new. It's caviar bites. It's compressed caviar and they put it in cocktails. Petrosian produces it. It's extraordinary. It's just an oil, and you put it in a caviar in a dirty martini. It's extraordinary.
Ooh, well, that sounds good.
I think I had a mullet about 20 years ago. Not no more, but I did.
It's hard to say which was more disgusting.
All right, so Fred, she married me anyway. That's what's so stupid about it. All right, so let's make sure that everybody knows where these restaurants are and when they're opening and how to find you online.
Yes, so the first restaurant, Table, will be opening next week, and it's located 903 N Street Northwest next to the Convention Center. You can visit us at tabledc.com. Mm-hmm. And then the second restaurant, Azure, is at Old Cafe Atlantico at 405 8th Street Northwest. Right. And also we have azuredc.com.
Will you be on open table?
What are we looking about for Azure?
Azure will probably end of February.
End of February.
Yeah, end of February. Okay. Open table, we take reservations at Azure. At Table, I want to just keep it walk-in.
No reservations?
Yeah, no reservations.
Cool.
We're trying for the beginning.
All right, well, best of luck.
It's a concept.
I should say.
I have to be honest, I really don't like
but
that.
But between us,
yes.
Nobody hears this, you can get a table.
I know,
before.
I can get a table.
Whoa. What about me?
What about you?
What about me?
No, but that's an interesting, I would love, maybe we'll bring a couple people back in the future to talk about this new trend of no reservations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just in D.C., it's a national trend in these smaller restaurants. I don't like it.
All right.
I think it's a concept of restaurant what we're trying to create. I think it's very different of Azure and Tablis. It's the type of restaurant you're trying to create.
Which I totally understand. Yeah. I just don't like waiting online.
All right. Good luck to you, man.
Yeah. Thank you very
Seriously.
Much.
Thanks All right, let's go
me.
Back to Francisco Garcia and David Burks from Food, Wine & Co. What are you guys going to pour next? The beer was awesome, by the way.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, those tangerine notes just kind of...
You know, I'm drinking beer, I'm drinking Miro wine, I'm drinking cocktails.
I like the bourbon.
You've got it all over there.
I need a designated driver.
I'm glad that you're enjoying it. Right. All right, so the next cocktail that I'm making is a spin on classic, a white Russian. We call it the White Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so basically we take some Windsor from Enlightened Grained. It's their one of their... flagship vodkas that's infused with sage and Earl Grey tea.
Ooh, neat.
Organic. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we take some of the Dancing Pines chai liqueur. Okay. Equal counts. Okay. And then we add the heavy cream into it.
So this is a very low calorie drink.
Very, very low calorie drink.
You probably noticed how slim I am and you understand that it's okay to.
Right.
Okay.
Give it a good vigorous shake.
Sound effects.
This drink is perfect for dessert as a digestivo. Okay, it pairs very lovely with our fried apple pie. If you haven't come by and tried it, you must. It's one of my favorite things on
fried
the menu.
Fried apple pie.
Mommy.
Right.
Oh yes.
It does sound
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah. How come you didn't bring any of that?
All right. Well, while you're pouring.
Next time.
We're going to bring in Joel Finkelstein of Quella Coffee. Joel, I'm going to have you. You want to sit where Frederick is sitting, or would you prefer standing? What works for you?
I don't know. Frederick's going to give out food for free. I think he should teach.
We didn't mention Frederick's dish, actually. We should quickly make mention. He made a beautiful dish. Do you want to just tell everybody what you made?
So this is a Napoleon of Grand Marnier panna cotta with grapefruit.
It's beautiful. It's Thank you.
Beautiful.
It is a dessert.
Say goodbye to it now. All right. So what is, first of all, Joel, welcome.
Yes. Thank
Qualia
you.
Qualia coffee. What does Qualia mean?
Well, Qualia is actually a philosophical term. It refers
to... You just lost me.
Okay.
I'm a meatball.
It refers to the simplest explanation I can give is it refers to the indescribable experience of the senses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of what makes us human. There's certain things that we have to experience that we can't quite relay. So food, I think, really falls in that wine.
That's why I married Nikki.
Coffee.
Very funny.
And so I really like the concept that that you know there are certain complexities to coffee that we are very subjective, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's talk about
coffee. I mean,
yeah. Well,
is there the
ingredient or the element of terroir with coffee as there is with wines or?
Yeah, I think you're. I think
Boy,
you're.
Listen to what my husband
I think
has
you're
learned.
Right, got it right on the
well,
nose.
It looks like the word. Wait, wait.
Wow,
it looks like the word terror, which I associate with marriage, which I associate with coffee in the morning, so I can get out of the house.
Okay. All I can say is you've been married three times. If you want to get married a fourth, have at it.
No, it's an easy walk.
I love a good cappuccino or latte. They're beautiful, but for me, where a lot of the interest in coffee is in black coffee. And that has to do with origin.
Hmm.
So the first thing you need to know about your coffee is where is it coming from? So a lot of people come in and say they want a dark roast or a light roast. We really refocus them and say, you know, what makes this distinctive is where the coffee comes from. That's where the flavor is, and that's where you're going to find the variety. And so when we roast, we really try to be almost invisible. What we want to do is bring out the natural flavor of the coffee and not focus so much on the
roast. Is
there
a special twist to roasting?
Well, that's a pretty complicated question. We have a very sophisticated approach to roasting. We have what's called a profiling program that allows us to track the roast. And we track
five... That sounds like it's racist in some way.
We're profile roasting, yeah.
There's no controversy on the show.
At least, yeah. Coffee beans definitely do not have equal rights in our society.
Okay.
But we track five different temperature points in mm-hmm. the roasting process. And so there's it's like anything. You know, you can have a home cook who makes the same dishes that are made in a restaurant, but the sophistication is very different. I mean, I started out roasting with a popcorn popper. Was this
in college or something?
No, this was after college.
Were you under the influence
more?
Of something?
Well, the problem is with so much of the coffee that's out there is it's just old. So, like, the coffee that we sell, all the beans that we sell are within 3 days of roast. And everything...
But you honestly do all your own roasting, so you're getting them from purveyors that you trust, and then you're managing the process.
Right, right. But, I mean, if I were buying coffee on the market, a lot of times you don't know when it was roasted.
Right.
And even the ones that have expiration dates can be 6 months or a year out. I literally don't drink any coffee that's more than 9 or 10 days from roast.
Okay, but so let's talk about where you're sourcing your beans from.
Okay.
And so how does it go from sourcing the beans to roasting to cup?
It all adds to complexity. I mean, it is very much like terroir in that there's these many stages in the process. Versus another coffee shop, we go a little farther back in the process from sourcing the green coffee versus getting it from another roaster.
Mm-hmm.
But we talk to our farmers. We look at where it's coming from, how it was grown, how it was harvested, how it was processed after being. So I brought three coffees today. One of them is a dry process coffee.
Okay. What does that mean?
Well, so coffee grows in a cherry. And a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And the process to get it ready for export is to take it out of the fruit.
Okay.
And there's many different ways of doing that. And one way is to dry it with the fruit still on.
Mm-hmm.
And so you actually get some of the flavors of the fruit in the coffee.
Oh, interesting. And so once you bring you source your different beans.
Yeah.
And then we have
coffees from around the world. So, like, today I brought coffee from Africa, Indonesia,
right.
and Central and South America.
I know this sounds like a left field question, but I mean, people are doing, you know, coffee's become... gourmet in so many ways.
Yeah.
And I heard an article.
I like connoisseur.
I was going to say gourmet is such a...
Well, for me, it's kind of sewer.
Such
but,
a blah term.
I heard about a coffee that they feed to elephants. And
yeah,
let's,
that's just hype. That's total hype. Expensive coffee is largely hype. So there's a lot of really good coffee that is a little more expensive than sort of market rate. And then you start jumping up much higher prices, and a lot of that is hype. It's sort of like the exclusivity thing. It has nothing to do with the quality of the coffee. I've had Kopi Luwak, and I really don't truck with those coffees because, honestly, they end up leading to animal cruelty, and they're just well overpriced.
So it is a fact.
It is a fact that there is, yeah, there is, unfortunately, elephant poop coffee, sure.
Can you imagine having that job?
Oh, no,
and what does your son do, Mrs. Finkelstein? Well, I wanted him to be a doctor.
But. We are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, why don't you bring your coffees over and let's do a little tasting so you can show us what we're looking for when we have a sip of coffee. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a moment.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And before we get back to Joel Finkelstein and Qualia Coffee, just want to thank the folks that make this show possible. If you're not one of them, don't be embarrassed. There's always a chance to get on board. Our friends at Georgetown Bagelry, best bagels in town. Neighborhood Restaurant Group, that's the two Rustico's Evening Star, Tallulah, Vermilion, Buzz Bakery, Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key, the two founding farmers. And also Farmer, Fisher, and Baker, which is now open down in Georgetown. Yeah, I want to remember that. The Central Farm Markets, the Black's Restaurant Group, and our friends Jeff and Barbara Black. Post down at the Monica Hotel. Union Market, where we will be live next 27th.
The 27th.
Not next week, the week after.
The week after.
And our friends at the Carpenter Shelter. So let's get back to Qualia Coffee. First of all, we're talking so much about coffee. Give us your location, because you have a retail store.
Yeah, it's a full-service coffee shop, and then we actually have the roastery in back.
Okay.
So you can kind of see the whole operation. It's very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
We are located at 3917 Georgia Avenue, which is in Petworth. And speaking of fine dining, we're right across the street from the Wendy's.
That's fantastic.
Joel, I'm the comedian.
So Joel, tell us, you brought in this cold brew concentrate.
Yes.
Tell us about this.
So cold brew is actually, there's a lot of different ways of extracting coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much temperature and time dependent. For the cold brew, we do it at room temperature. But we do it overnight.
Yeah, there you go. We've all been to college.
Sorry, go ahead.
We do it overnight. So it takes about 12 to 14 hours to brew it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it about twice the density of regular coffee. So when you pour it over ice, with a little milk and sugar, it kind of makes a very nice confection.
Yeah, it's really yummy.
Yeah, it's very tasty. I don't find it as – you don't get sort of the complexity you would with hot coffee, hot brewed coffee, because some of it – the volatiles get evaporated during the process.
How'd you get into coffee? Because you're – into it, man.
So, I am into it. Well, just because there is so many levels of complexity and interest to it, and I guess that just really, it's something I could kind of commit my life to. But I used to be a reporter before that, and then I was freelancing and roasting coffee at home, going to farmers markets, and then just decided to go legit. And my girlfriend got tired of having 700 pounds of green coffee in the kitchen. So,
all that elephant poo.
Yeah. thinking, while the economy is, going down the toilet, this is a great time to open a coffee shop.
Right, let's get into
coffee.
Speaking
of elephant poo. Right.
How did you learn?
It's very much a visceral. It's a lot like cooking. I am constantly learning. A lot of what we do is I think it's very much an art and science to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of data collection. We roast in very small batches. So we're roasting 6 or 7 pounds at a time, which means we roast at least four times a day. So we have a lot of iteration.
Are you roasting in the store? I mean,
yeah,
is everything all set up?
Yeah, we have a small 3K roaster. It's kind of a compact roaster.
So do you supply beans to some of the area restaurants? Is that something you're looking to do?
We would like to do that. We haven't had a lot of interest. We do supply coffee for Shea Billy, which is about a block away.
Right.
And to DC Reynolds, which is about 3 blocks away.
Okay.
So,
well, keeping it hyper local.
Well, but DC
also...
Reynolds is Design Cuisine. So.
No, not DC.
No,
it's
a bar.
Oh.
They don't do espresso, which is great for us, and they brew everything to order.
Okay.
So
do you have a specific brewing method that you prefer?
No. I mean, the only thing I would say that you don't want to do is percolators.
Okay.
But everything else, that complexity.
Are a lot of people doing percolators these days?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of people, but there are people out there who still use them.
Okay.
It's sort of like, it's the conservative way of doing coffee because it's recirculating the water, the brewed coffee, and so you get a very you can use less coffee basically.
I got a question. What about seminars and tastings and all that? Do you do that yet?
We're actually doing a tasting today at 2.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be at the shop. I did a living social class, and I'm hoping to launch some classes in house as well.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming
coffee
in.
Coffee as art.
We'll bring you back because I'd love to do more of a bigger tasting where we can sort of taste the complexities and what you're trying to bring out.
Sure. And I always like a free cup of coffee. So,
thanks for that.
It's a perfect melding of missions.
Yeah, I think you're in the right business, Dave.
I am, definitely. That's right.
He's in no business. All right, well, let's go back to Gustavo. Gustavo?
That's not what you said when we bought that purse, honey. All right.
It's because I bought that purse.
Oh, yeah.
Gustavo. So, tell us what we're looking for in this wine that we're tasting. We're back with Mira Winery.
Well, back to the Syrah. It's a 2009, which is a really exceptional vintage in Napa. Mm-hmm. So we got very good weather during the ripening season. We had plenty of rain in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. Actually, not that much rain in 2009. It was a little bit dry. So that meant that the fruit got pretty concentrated on the vine.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to show here, represent is what happened in that vineyard condition and not try to hide it under a bunch of oak. So this wine here was aged for 18 months in 10-year-old barrels primarily, so extremely neutral, with the goal of preserving the fruit characteristics that we noticed when we were tasting the grapes out there. So when you smell it, there's a little bit, hopefully, that peppermint I was talking about earlier, but there's a lot of blackberry.
Mm-hmm.
And when you smell it, the taste is a little bit different.
She's laughing because she has an educated palate. My palate can't get out of the second grade.
It's okay.
So when you taste it, the aromas are pretty intense and maybe a little bit rich. But when you taste it, you find that there's acidity there and there's plenty of structure to withhold the wine, to keep the wine together. Important for us to have the structure and this acidity because our goal is to have the wine be able to pair well with food. So we don't want this big fruit bomb that's just going to knock out your taste sensation. We want it to be accentuated by the food that it's going to be paired with, and also to accentuate that food you're going to be eating.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Just tell everybody where they can find you.
Thank you for having us. And right now, you can find us at miranapa.com. And if you're ever in the Napa Valley, we look forward to receiving you out there because we love to do visits and barrel tastings and stuff like that.
Excellent.
Can we bring the kids and the dogs?
You can bring the kids and the dogs where we are. We don't have any rules.
Awesome.
Love that.
All right. I'm all over that.
All right. Let's go back to Food, Wine, and Co. and Beer, Wine, and Co. Guys, you've made a terrific array of cocktails this morning. give people just sort of a last 411 on where you are and the kind of food that you're serving there and how you're working with Chef Michael Haar to put out what you're doing.
Certainly. We're located heart of Bethesda, right on Wisconsin Avenue, 7272 Wisconsin to be exact. We're right next to the movie theater, so it's very convenient if you're going to go.
And there's parking.
And there's absolutely there is parking.
That's hard to come by.
That's right. The old Uno's Pizza. That's right.
No judgment, of course.
Right. Thank you. And.